When you look at an old school paper map, there's this real tangible comfort in those solid, unbroken lines.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Right? Like, the borders are fixed, the oceans are blue, the capital cities have a little star next to them. It's clean, it's static.
It gives you this deeply reassuring illusion that the world is just, a finished drawing.
Exactly. Like, power is just neatly contained within those very specific geographical boxes.
And it makes the world feel predictable. I mean, if you can point to a country on a map, you kind of feel like you understand its boundaries and its limitations.
But then you start looking a little closer and you realize the real map isn't drawn with ink at all.
No, it's really not.
The actual map is drawn with completely invisible lines of power. So
Yeah.
we're talking about, energy grids, global supply chains, massive data streams, and of course, financial corridors.
Which are constantly moving.
Right. They are shifting and rerouting right beneath our feet every single day. And when you realize that, suddenly, that static paper map you trusted is completely obsolete. It's basically a massive systemic blind spot.
Because if you only look at the physical borders, you completely miss the actual forces shaping the board. You're basically watching the shadows on the wall instead of looking at the hands casting them.
And stepping out of those shadows is exactly what we are doing today. So, welcome to this deep dive into the Truth Seeker Weekly Briefing Alternative News for April 24th, presented on behalf of the Great Awakening Report.
And it's great to be here.
Yeah, and today's mission is fundamentally different from a standard news recap. We are stepping completely outside of the matrix to explore alternative analysis and frameworks that the mainstream media simply will not cover.
That's right.
We're not here to just, consume another exhausting list of headlines. The goal today is to help you recognize the signals hidden in the noise, follow those financial and energetic threads, and connect the dots in a world that is experiencing some really intense narrative volatility.
But before we dive into the deep end, it is so crucial to establish the ground rules for how we are analyzing this information today.
Good point. Yeah, let's set the stage.
Right, because the sources and the alternative frameworks we are exploring today, they touch on highly debated political figures, controversial historical theories, and incredibly polarizing global events.
Which is pretty much everything in the news right now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, as your guides through this material, we want you to know we are stepping into a space of strict impartiality. We are not here to take sides or to endorse specific political campaigns or, to validate the literal truth of every single theory presented in the briefing.
We're just looking at the architecture.
Precisely. Our objective is to explore the frameworks of these alternative analyses. We want to see what deeper systemic patterns reveal themselves when you force yourself to look at the world through a completely non-traditional lens.
So we are dissecting the mechanics of power. And the briefing starts this breakdown on the physical battlegrounds of global trade.
The logistics layer.
Right. When you watch coverage of modern geopolitical conflicts, the traditional narrative almost always focuses on territory. Who is invading whom and who is capturing which piece of land?
But the alternative perspective frames modern warfare entirely differently.
Totally differently. It suggests that territorial disputes are largely just a distraction, and the real war is a battle over systems, logistics, and future economic architecture.
Because the leverage has completely shifted. Historically, global dominance meant occupying vast continents. But this framework points our attention to strategic maritime choke points.
Like the big transit lanes.
Exactly. Think about the Strait of Hormuz, the Suez Canal, the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, the Panama Canal, and the critical access routes in the Black Sea. These are the narrow, highly vulnerable portals of global commerce.
They're bottlenecks.
Yeah, and the alternative analysis suggests that whoever controls the movement of energy, physical goods, and money through these specific gateways effectively dictates the behavior of the entire region.
And you can do that all without needing to deploy a million troops to occupy a desert.
Exactly.
It makes me think of the board game Settlers of Catan.
Oh, I love that game.
Right. If you've ever played it, the absolute rookie mistake is trying to build your settlements on the biggest, most resource-heavy tiles right in the middle of the board.
Because you think you're winning if you hold the most land.
Exactly. But the player who actually wins the game is the one who quietly builds the longest road and takes control of all the trading ports on the outer edges.
Yep, the ports are everything.
They end up completely starving out the players who only focused on holding territory, because suddenly no one can move their wheat or their ore without paying a toll or getting permission.
That is a perfect analogy. because you don't need to own the wheat field if you own the only road the wheat can travel on.
Right.
And this dynamic introduces one of the most compelling theories in the briefing, which is the concept of controlled instability.
Okay, yeah. This is where the alternative framework completely upends how we view the daily news cycle.
Because we constantly see conflicts that seem incredibly prolonged, right? Dragging on for years with no decisive victory, no clear resolution, and seemingly endless funding.
Which is exhausting to watch.
It is. And the traditional view assumes this is just a failure of diplomacy or bad military strategy. But the alternative framework asks a much darker, more structural question. What if the inability to resolve a conflict quickly is actually an intentional strategy?
So you're saying maintaining a low boil of constant instability serves a functional purpose?
Think about the mechanics of it. A perpetual state of regional tension forces allied nations to continuously purchase military hardware, which fuels a massive defense industry.
Sure.
But more importantly, a prolonged conflict acts as a brilliant smokescreen. While the global public is emotionally consumed by the daily tragedy of a war, deeper structural resets can advance quietly in the background.
Oh, wow. Like what kind of resets?
Well, central banks might be testing new digital currencies, massive sovereign debts might be quietly restructured, or the global reserve currency could be shifting.
I see. So the war creates the necessary state of emergency to justify sweeping financial shifts that, frankly, the public would never accept during peacetime.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And the briefing specifically views Donald Trump's political style through this exact systemic lens.
Okay, this is interesting.
Yeah, it interprets his unconventional timing, his unpredictable foreign policy statements, and his chaotic signaling not as surface-level political theater or narcissism, but as a deliberate long-game strategy to disrupt those entrenched systems.
And again, just to remind you listening, we are acting as impartial guides here. We aren't declaring that this is the definitive factual truth of his internal intentions.
Right. Absolutely not. But within this alternative framework, every seemingly random geopolitical disruption is viewed as a calculated move to break the existing logistical chessboard.
It requires reading the systemic ripples rather than just reacting to the surface splash.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But controlling the physical shipping lanes and the ports is ultimately useless if you don't control the resource that actually powers the ships.
Right. Because if global logistics and trade corridors are, you know, the copper traces on a giant computer motherboard, then energy is the power supply unit.
It's the current.
It's the fundamental current that makes the entire machine function. And the source material frames energy not just as a tradable commodity, but as the ultimate foundational lever of global control.
Whoever dictates how energy is created literally dictates the future of human development.
And within the alternative analysis of energy, Nikola Tesla functions as the ultimate historical archetype.
He really does. He represents the massive systemic divergence in our history, like the path humanity was diverted from.
Because when you look at Tesla's actual proposal, specifically the Wardenclyffe Tower project, he wasn't just trying to build a better light bulb.
No, his vision was massive.
He was attempting to use the Earth's ionosphere to transmit power wirelessly across the entire globe. He envisioned a system where anyone, anywhere, could essentially stick an antenna into the ground and pull down limitless energy.
And from a centralized power perspective, that is a terrifying concept.
Because you can't meter it.
Exactly. You cannot attach a physical meter to the ionosphere.
Mm-hmm.
You can't monopolize, tax, or heavily regulate a resource that is wirelessly available to every single human being on the planet.
Right.
So the alternative space views the dismantling of Tesla's work as the exact moment human innovation was artificially constrained in favor of a centralized, highly controllable grid based on fossil fuels and massive infrastructure.
Now, I have to push back here on behalf of the listener, because when we dive into theories about suppressed technologies like advanced propulsion or zero point energy, it is so easy for the mind to picture a shadowy cabal of men in suits locking a perpetual motion machine in a subterranean vault.
Right, like out of a movie.
Exactly. Huh. But isn't it far more likely that we are just looking at the mundane, incredibly stubborn reality of infrastructure lock-in?
What do you mean by that?
Well, think about it structurally. The global economy has tens of trillions of dollars permanently sunk into oil refineries, deep-sea drilling platforms, shipping fleets, and traditional copper wire electrical grids.
Oh, I see.
Massive systems naturally resist revolutionary change simply out of economic self-preservation. Like, it doesn't actually require a secret society. It just requires a corporate board desperate to protect a multi-trillion-dollar balance sheet from becoming obsolete overnight.
That's a really fair point. And honestly, the briefing actually leaves room for that exact interpretation.
Oh.
Yeah. Whether a revolutionary energy technology is actively confiscated by an intelligence agency, or it's simply starved of venture capital because it threatens the entrenched business models of the S&P 500, the functional result for you and me is exactly the same.
The technology doesn't see the light of day.
Exactly. The evolution of human energy is artificially delayed. The friction of the status quo prevents the leap.
Because a genuine scalable breakthrough in decentralized energy would completely collapse the petrodollar system. It would rewrite that geopolitical map we were talking about earlier faster than any military invasion ever could.
And that level of physical power naturally bleeds into the next dimension of the briefing. Because if energy is the physical current of the world, we now have to look at the biological current.
Okay, shifting gears.
Right. The alternative framework moves from the power grid to the human grid. We're talking about the deeply interconnected systems of health, food, and climate.
You know, this feels like the ultimate terrifying evolution of corporate vertical integration.
It really is.
We are used to vertical integration in business, right? Like, a tech company buys the facility that manufactures their microchips, and then they buy the software company that writes their code, so they completely own the pipeline from start to finish.
Yeah, standard business practice.
But what the briefing outlines here is the vertical integration of human survival itself.
Which is a whole different scale. Because in a hyper-connected world, influence compounds across sectors. The alternative of analysis places intense scrutiny on the visibility of massive private capital and unelected philanthropy operating at a planetary scale.
Unelected being the key word there.
Exactly. And the primary example cited in the text is the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
Let's break down the mechanics of how that influence actually compounds. Because it isn't just about, you know, donating money to a hospital.
Not at all. It is about funding the foundational architecture of multiple overlapping systems.
Well, so.
Well, when an organization deploys billions of dollars into agricultural development, they often fund the research and patenting of highly specific genetically modified seeds. That dictates what farmers plant, which directly dictates global nutritional standards in human health. Simultaneously, the same entities heavily fund global health organizations and vaccine initiatives.
So they are hitting food and medicine at the same time.
Yes. And concurrently, they fund the climate research and policy groups that advocate for restricting traditional farming methods, which conveniently forces a heavier reliance on those patented agricultural technologies.
Well, wait, so let me get this straight. You fund the climate policy that outlaws the old way of farming. You own the patent for the new seed that complies with the policy, and you fund the medical institutions that treat the populations eating the food.
Yes.
It's a closed loop. The same unelected entities are operating parallel to, or even above, national governments.
And that creates a profound perception of centralized global governance.
Absolutely.
The briefing also contextualizes recent pharmaceutical price cuts within this framework. When major drug manufacturers suddenly drop the prices of essential medications, the traditional news celebrates it as a victory for the consumer or a sign of corporate altruism.
Right. Like, oh, look, Big Pharma's finally doing the right thing.
Exactly. But the alternative lens views it as a strategic pressure release valve.
A pressure release valve?
Yeah. When public trust in the medical establishment completely collapses and people start asking deep structural questions about the ethics of the pharmaceutical industry, a sudden price cut is deployed to pacify the outrage.
Oh, wow. So it is a calculated concession to stop the public from dismantling the system entirely.
Exactly. It keeps the core structure intact.
You know, when you look at that level of concentrated, synchronized influence over the basic building blocks of life like food, medicine, environment, it is incredibly easy to feel entirely powerless. I mean, how are you supposed to process that?
It is overwhelming. But the briefing suggests the vital takeaway isn't despair. The healthy response to recognizing this architecture is an uncompromising demand for transparency.
Oh, I like that.
Right. It is about recognizing the structure of the board so you can stop playing the game blindly.
So we have looked at the geopolitical shipping lanes, the suppressed energy grids, and the closed loops of global health and agriculture. We have thoroughly mapped the earthly board.
We have.
But then the briefing asks us to do something radical. It asks us to tilt our heads back and look at the solar system. We are moving into the cosmic interface.
It is a staggering shift in scale.
Hmm.
We go from asking how human billionaires shape the world to asking how the physical universe itself shapes our reality.
And the briefing grounds this first and observable, undisputed science right. Like, NASA and NOAA are currently tracking highly elevated levels of solar activity.
Yes, very measurable stuff.
We are witnessing major solar flares and massive geomagnetic storms that measurably impact our technology. They can disrupt GPS, fry satellites, and overwhelm electrical grids.
But the alternative inquiry takes that scientific reality and pushes it further. It asks a deeply provocative question. Human beings operate on a nervous system that is fundamentally electrical, right? So, if a massive cosmic cycle can induce a current strong enough to blow out a transformer on a telephone pole, does it also agitate human brainwaves? Does it alter human biology or mass psychology?
That is wild to think about.
And the analysis extends this interconnected view to the Earth's internal systems as well. It highlights measurable increases in seismic and volcanic activity, specifically citing the ongoing activity at the Kilauea volcano.
Right, in Hawaii.
Yes. In the alternative framework, Kilauea acts as a literal geological release of the Earth's internal pressure, but it also serves as a potent macro metaphor for the psychological and societal pressure building within humanity.
It suggests that the Earth and its inhabitants are venting pressure simultaneously.
Exactly. The briefing even touches on astrological timing, noting how ancient cultures utilized the mathematical alignment of planets as a functional framework to make sense of these complex, overlapping cycles of change.
Okay, I have to jump in with some skeptical evolutionary pushback here.
Go for it.
Human beings are, at our core, hardwired, desperate, pattern-seeking machines. We survived on the savanna because we saw the grass rustle and immediately assumed a lion was causing it rather than just the wind, right?
Right. Better safe than sorry.
Exactly. We invent causation to feel safe. So when we see a massive volcano erupt during the exact same week the global stock market takes a dive, or a solar flare hits during a massive geopolitical crisis, aren't we just projecting our own internal, very human anxieties onto completely random, indifferent cosmic events?
It is a really sharp critique.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, the source material acknowledges that direct scientific causation between planetary alignments and human political events is unproven.
There's no data for that.
Right. There is no peer-reviewed mechanism showing that a solar flare causes a specific revolution.
Mm.
But the alternative framework argues that the value is in the inquiry itself because it attacked the rigid silos of modern thinking.
Ah, I see. Because we study the sun in an astrophysics building, and we study human anxiety in a psychology building across campus, and we never let the two departments talk to each other.
Precisely the issue. Modern science relies heavily on reductionism, breaking things down into isolated parts. The alternative framework forces us to consider the possibility that the Earth, the sun, and human consciousness are a vastly integrated, dynamically interactive system.
So it's about the big picture.
Yeah. Even if you view the astrological elements as purely symbolic archetypes, the curiosity itself drives you to look for deeper systemic harmony rather than just viewing Earth as a closed, isolated rock floating in a vacuum.
And honestly, trying to synthesize all of this, the rerouted geopolitical shipping lanes, the suppressed technological breakthroughs, the unelected corporate loops of global health, and the literal electromagnetic interference from the sun, synthesizing all of that simultaneous pressure is exactly what leads to the climax of this briefing.
The convergence.
Right. It is what they call the perception shift and the meta-convergence.
This is the moment the informational environment fundamentally fractures.
Yeah.
The briefing details how the public's trust in legacy, centralized institutions like mainstream media conglomerates, government experts, legacy financial systems, is in a state of steep terminal decline.
People just don't believe them anymore.
No, they don't. And in its place, we are witnessing the explosive rise of independent, decentralized media operating as a massive parallel infrastructure.
Because it's not just a few fringe blogs anymore. It is a robust alternative ecosystem of independent investigative podcasts, sovereign newsletters, and decentralized broadcast platforms.
Exactly.
And that parallel infrastructure is driving what the briefing calls the Great Awakening through compression. And I have to say, I think compression is the absolute perfect word to describe what it feels like to be alive right now.
It captures the visceral reality of living through simultaneous overlapping systemic stressors. It is the experience of inflation devastating your purchasing power, while a health crisis threatens your biology, while a geopolitical conflict threatens global stability, and environmental anomalies disrupt your local weather.
Yeah, those events are not happening sequentially.
No, they are hitting the human nervous system all at once. This multi-system compression forces individuals to painfully and often very reluctantly dismantle and reevaluate their entire foundational worldview.
And the alternative space often refers to this culmination as the event. But the briefing clarifies a really crucial misconception about that.
What's that?
Well, the event is not a single Hollywood-style explosion. It is not an alien mothership landing on the White House lawn or, the power grid going down globally in one dramatic afternoon.
It's not a movie.
Right. It describes the event as a rolling multi-system convergence. The old centralized system slowly, messily, and aggressively collapses at the exact same time a new decentralized system is being born.
Which requires a completely different mental model to understand.
To me, it feels exactly like the movement of tectonic plates.
Ah, that's a good way to look at it.
When you think about a massive earthquake, the continental plates do not just magically snap into a new position in a vacuum. It is a slow, agonizing, unstoppable grinding of unimaginable mass deep beneath the surface.
Yeah, the pressure builds over decades.
Exactly. It ruptures, it resettles, and it permanently reshapes the entire landscape. But it is a messy, grinding, destructive process for anyone standing on the surface. So, as you, the listener, are standing on these shifting plates, what does this actually mean for how you navigate this overwhelming amount of noise?
Well, the ultimate synthesis of this briefing is that the mechanism of power has shifted. It evolved from physical territorial control to financial control to narrative control.
And now.
Now, due to this systemic compression, even that centralized narrative control is completely breaking down.
Wow.
The existence of a parallel media infrastructure means there is no single trusted authority left to simply hand you the truth. Therefore, the ultimate responsibility, which is both a massive burden and an incredible freedom, now rests entirely on your shoulders as the individual.
It is entirely up to you to compare conflicting sources, to synthesize overlapping patterns, and to practice relentless critical discernment.
Which brings us to our final wrap-up.
And I think it is incredibly important that we acknowledge right now just how intensely heavy and exhausting it is to live through this kind of multi-layered historical
It
transition.
really is, and the briefing explicitly validates the profound emotional, physical, and spiritual toll that this level of systemic compression takes on the human body.
You are not crazy for feeling entirely overwhelmed or exhausted or anxious.
Not at all. You are simply feeling the literal friction of macro systems grinding against each other.
So, to help navigate that friction, the Great Awakening Report briefing leaves us with four highly practical pillars for shifting out of a reactive, fear-based matrix state and into what they term higher frequency living. Let's break down what these actually look like in practice.
Sounds good.
The first pillar is letting go of fear.
And the briefing identifies fear not just as an emotion, but as the master key of systemic control. When your nervous system is trapped in a state of fear, your critical thinking shuts down, and you become incredibly easy to manipulate by whatever headline is flashed in front of you. Consciously refusing to be afraid is the foundational act of personal sovereignty.
That's powerful. The second pillar is practicing forgiveness and emotional clearing.
In practical terms, this is about dissolving what the alternative space calls energetic residue.
Energetic residue.
Yeah. If you are holding on to the deep anger of yesterday's political news cycle or, personal resentments, that psychological blockage clouds your ability to clearly discern the reality of today. You cannot navigate a new system using the bitter energy of the old one.
That makes total sense. Now, the third pillar introduces meditation and transformational breathing.
And this is not just a spiritual platitude, it is a mechanical tool.
A tool for the nervous system.
Exactly. In a digital world engineered to pull your attention into 1,000 anxiety-inducing directions, breathwork physically hacks your vagus nerve. It pulls your body out of fight or flight mode and anchors your consciousness back into the present physical moment.
And finally, the fourth pillar is living with the heart of a volunteer.
Which is so important. Once you do the work to see these overlapping systems for what they actually are, your response shouldn't be to build a bunker and hide from humanity.
Right. Don't just isolate yourself.
Exactly. The response is to lead with service, deep integrity, and massive compassion for the people around you who are still struggling to process the collapse of the systems they trusted. You build the parallel infrastructure locally.
These pillars perfectly set up the profound quote the briefing uses to close its analysis. It states, quote, "You're either outside acting in the movie or going within to watch it consciously."
That's a great line. It is a direct challenge to stop being a reactive character violently tossed around by the plot and instead become the conscious observer sitting in the theater.
And that leaves me with one final provocative thought for you to mull over as you go about your day. If you actually make that choice, if you step back, release the fear, and choose to watch the movie consciously from the observer's seat, does that act of internal withdrawal actually change the genre of the external film entirely?
It suggests that the internal dictates the external.
Right. If the chaotic, grinding friction of the geopolitical world is, on some fundamental level, just a macro mirror reflecting our collective, unresolved internal state, then maybe the solution isn't fighting harder on the shifting map.
Maybe not.
Maybe finding absolute sovereign stillness in your own living room is actually the most radical geopolitical act you can take today.
It completely redefines where true power actually originates.
Well said. Thank you to all the truth seekers for joining us on this deep dive. Stay grounded, stay fiercely aware, and keep connecting the dots. We'll see you next time.